Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Booker T. Washington Speaks on this Saturday evening. This is your host and moderator, Marshall Washington Cabinets Bowie, and I'd like to also introduce you to our co-host, Dr. Halim Mustafa. Dr. Mustafa, are you there?
I am, sir. Yes, I am, and glad to be back here after a little spin away. So I'm ready for tonight's talk, sir.
Okay, well, fine. Well, it's so good to have you back. What we are going to talk about this evening. Right now, it's just you and myself actually on the panel. We have invited other panelists to check in so they can join us. But who is company, and so we do have you and me to initiate the discussion. And the topic for tonight's show is what is your response what is your response to Trump's proposal to arm American school teachers with firearms?
Well, my response, first of all, that's a very slippery slope. And coming at myself as a former police officer, I understand the danger with even yourself having a gun to carry. And if you are not really equipped to know how to manage a gun, you can accidentally shoot somebody in trying to pull it out to do some good, to help somebody. So my first thought is that if there's a situation where the school campuses are so violent, my first suggestion would be to utilize the metal detectors that they use at the airports to screen the students when they come on campus as a first bridge of what becomes a basis of managing the violence that might be on the campuses, if there is any at all. But when you do that, in my opinion, you are inviting a hostile group of young people to see you differently as a school teacher. Now you are a gun-toting teacher, and I don't think I would like to learn in an environment with a teacher carrying a gun. That's my personal opinion on that. So I just think that there needs to be some more thought in the president's comments about utilizing guns with teachers to enforce certain behavior that might intercede in so-called violence on campus. But as I said before, my first priority would be to secure the perimeters with the same level of airport security that President Bush initiated with code you know, three codes. I think there was a yellow, a green, and a red, or whatever the code was that that signifies the urgency or the seriousness of matters. That's my comment, sir.
Well, that's good. Now, I want to reflect on that because I just recently went through an airport security check here in my town where I live in Augusta, Georgia, which is a relatively small airport. And even though it seems like the air traffic from this airport is starting to pick up, still compared to like Chicago where I was headed, it's pretty small. But I did the security check-in in Augusta, and I actually had to go through the body scan first, and then and I'm not traveling under any kind of a name that would arouse suspicion. So my name that I travel with is on my identification on my driver's license is a regular American type of name, Marshall Cabanes. So it's nothing that would cause me to arouse any suspicion, but you know, they had me go through the metal detector, and then they put me off the side and did the police-style body search, not a cavity search, but, you know, the frisking. And then he, the TSA agent, had me put my fingerprint swipe my finger on this piece of paper, and they put this paper in some kind of chemical. And I'm saying, what's all this about? It's almost like, you know, that they suspect I might be a bomb maker or something. So they may have me on a watch list, even though, you know, I'm traveling under this particular name, because, you know, I have a long history of being associated with the Muslim community in the United States going back like 50 years, even though I've never done anything or spoken out in any way that would cause them to have any suspicions. But, you know, they passed me because I didn't have anything that would cause them not to pass me. I was a little surprised when they went to that extent because they wasn't doing everybody like that. But I got through all right. And my point is this, that, and it's ironic, I just want to say this, that on the way back, one of the travelers that was traveling to Atlanta with me from Chicago was an older lady, and she had ordered a wheelchair service, and she said, would you like to get wheelchair service? And I said, sure. She said, well, she called a young lady who was the wheelchair service person and told her that I wanted to get wheelchair service. And so the lady, she took me through the security, and it was a piece of cake. You know, it just, you know, I didn't have to get no body scan. I didn't have to go through anything except sit in the wheelchair. And she, I didn't even have to stand up for them to, you know, give me any kind of scan or anything. And I said, now, just because this lady who doesn't even know me recommended to this wheelchair service agent that didn't know me, but the system allowed me to just breeze right on through there. In matter of fact, they spent more time checking the wheelchair. I had to get out of the wheelchair. And they spent more time checking the wheelchair than they did checking me. So I'm saying, they had I call it the magic wand, you know, they had this scanner wand going off over the wheelchair. They didn't even do my body like that. I was
wow.
Saying, man, but I guess really what I'm saying, and we have another caller who just came on, and I want to welcome the caller. Hold on just 1 second. Just give me a second, because I definitely want to welcome our caller. Okay, caller, you're welcome. We just have a little discussion. My co-host and dear friend, Dr. Holly Mustafa, and I, we were just having a little discussion about the topic, and you could chime in. I just wanted to finish making my point, but I do want to welcome you, who's from the 724 area code, and your last three digits, 397. So we just want to say thank you for joining our show tonight, and we're going to hear your opinion in just a minute. We're talking about the topic, what is your response to President Trump's proposal to arm American school teachers with firearms? So let me just finish my point, and then I want to ask you if you'd like to make a response. Anyway, so what I was actually saying to you, Dr. Mustafa, is that the procedure, now you remember that school down there in Florida had like 3,000 students, but they were in several different buildings, but still, you know, if you have one of these combined high schools like they have in a lot of cities today with 1,000 students, and even if you have them going through different doors to the same building, it could take an inordinate amount of time. They'd have to get to school at 6:30 in the morning just to be in class at 8 o'clock because of the amount of time it would take to send them through the metal detector to check their book bags. And in some cases, maybe they even frisk them, you know, if they've had any kind of a history of any kind of violence in their past. Maybe they had a misdemeanor where they got in a fight, and then they may be on a special list where they have to really get frisked and everything. And then the school day would start off not in a, what I would say, learning, favorable environment, but, you know, it would be like these kids going to prison for 8 hours, and that's not conducive to them actually being creative or having an excitement about learning. You know, the only thing they probably think about is when is the clock going to say it's time for me to get up out of here. let me get out of this lockdown where these teachers might haul off and shoot me. Because, you know, the other thing, I was thinking this too, I was saying, now, if there's a teacher who thinks, you know, they're the classical John Wayne type of desperado, right? And now you get this person of gun, and let's say in some of these in school situations, you have boys and girls that try to be tough people, and in the classroom, they may be not really seriously planning on getting into a major fight, but they might test each other, you know, like one of them might just bump the other one on purpose just to say hello, you know, and the teacher perceives that as, okay, I got to stop this before it gets out of hand, and we have a riot in here. So the first thing he does is he pulls out his gun, you know, just because some kids are fooling around. And as you said earlier, first of all, that's going to be very intimidating for the students that just came to go to school and not to see the Wild West show. And then the second thing is if he doesn't know what he's doing, he could shoot himself in the foot, pulling the gun out the holster, or shoot somebody by accident, or maybe on purpose, thinking that he's doing right by keeping these guys from having a riot. You know, all kinds of factors have to be looked at when you talk about this. Go ahead.
I want to say, Professor, remember that shooting in Oakland at the BART station, Fruitvale, by the police, BART police, during New Year's night, Eve party? There was a group of young people, black, majority and Hispanic, but the point is that the police officers had this young man on the ground face down,
yeah.
And the police officer pulled up which he said he thought was his taser, but he fired a .357 or some kind of 9mm or some kind of higher velocity in the back of this young person laying on the ground prone.
Yeah.
So that's just
another
example. Just want to say that how it can work negatively.
Yeah, exactly. But let's go ahead and hear from our other guest that just came on. How are you this evening? And if you're your name, that's fine, but you don't have to feel obligated to do that because I think I recognize where you're from. but I just wanted you, if you want to let our audience know who you are, that's fine. But you've heard a little bit of the conversation. Would you like to contribute to it?
Yes, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
I don't think it's a good idea to have teachers carry firearms in the school setting. With all, I think the whole, it just creates a different, it just will change the environment for learning. If we have to do anything, it's maybe to have others, like they do now, they have resource officers that are in the school, but it's definitely something that, I guess, with the climate that we have and now in our among our youth, that has to be addressed at school, this violence. But even according to that school in Florida, there was a guard with a gun that chose not to go into the school.
Oh,
so,
God.
Yeah, that's coming out now that there was one there, and he didn't go into the school. He stayed outside.
Wow.
And so I'm, man, here supposedly is a person that's trained in the and to protect the students, and his job was to protect the students, and he chose not to do that. What would happen in the situation with the teacher in the midst of her or him or her teaching that they would have, you know, it's just, you know, it's almost like we're getting back to the Wild Wild West. If everybody's going to carry a gun, then maybe we don't need police officers. And, you know, and I think it's putting a Band-Aid on the problem. And I think that in school reform, we have to see now that a lot of our youth are coming to school with a lot of stress and depression and other mental health issues. And maybe some of the reform has to come in the form of putting mental health professionals in the schools instead of, you know, kicking these students out and putting them in alternative environments where they're not getting help for their problems that they have. Even with that young man, it's supposedly got kicked out of that school. But I guess he still lived in the area, and maybe his issues were never really addressed. And supposedly, too, that I think he lost his dad at one other time in his life, and then just in November, I think, as they said, his mother had passed, and then that led to a family taking him in and everything. And then, of course, we have to look at why do we need guns? Why do these young people feel that they need a gun? So I think there's that. I mean, I think that's not the best way to deal with the problem, is to arm the people. Even though I think here next to me, I'm in Pennsylvania and Ohio, someone that owns a shooting range and is an ex-police officer, he's already volunteered his place, and the teachers don't have to pay. He had up to 260 teachers that have already signed up to learn how to shoot a firearm. So even though it may not have passed in the schools yet, but, you know, that a lot of people are already getting ready for that. And I am a retired educator, and I think I could shoot. I've had to shoot at them before, but I don't know in that kind of circumstances if I would panic or whatever, you know, myself. So I don't think it's the best solution to the problem.
Yeah, this is Dr. Mustafa. Can you hear me, Professor?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I want to say I'm a former cop with 10 years of service in East Palo Alto, California. I resigned with good, which you might say, reputation. I didn't get fired for doing something stupid, like a lot of cops end up doing. They have fun a lot of times with the criminals in ways that are demeaning. It's egotistical in the sense of how they exercise the authority as white police officers or police officers who don't have the innate concerns of the local people. Now, I want to say that it's all about a business perspective as I see it, because when you put something out there like that on such a broad stage, people who are entrepreneurs will position themselves to make money on the crises. And this is my perception of what's going on here. I'll stop right now.
Okay, well, we definitely want you to elaborate on that when you come back on. We've had a couple of other guests join us since we began, and we want to say welcome to you all who have joined in the last few minutes. And just to reiterate the topic that we are discussing, what is your response to President Donald Trump's proposal to arm American school teachers with firearms? And we've had Dr. Mustafa and our sister from Pennsylvania and myself, we've made some comments. We are welcoming your comments at this time. So just please, first come, first serve. Let's hear what's on your mind.
Good evening, everybody. It's Faina here. I just got home, and I was hoping you guys are still on so I can see what you're talking about. And I guess the whole country's talking about it. First, I'd like to say that it's just horrific. As an educator, I saw the other day, a couple of days or a day after Trump made his statement that some entrepreneur, as Billy was talking about, has actually gone out and invented or created a bulletproof shield for elementary school children to cover up under, and had advertisements showing them in the hallway by their lockers covered up under these orange bulletproof blankets, I guess. I don't know what you could call them. I was like, oh, wow. How did you do that so fast? And then last week or this week I was researching the United States social violent culture, cultural violence in America. And it's an acceptable thing for people to be socially violent in this country. It's part of the culture. And I think that the NRA and the powers that be, I mean, it's in the Constitution that you can have the Second Amendment, you can have your weapons to defend yourself no matter what anybody says. That's the law of the land. And I think the teachers out in Ohio already have guns. Some of them already have guns in the schools out there. And some other state, I forgot. I don't know. I can't remember right now off the top of my head. But I see that this social culture of violence or social violent culture that we have is a part of a death culture where we have people worshiping death, where people are doing human sacrifices. And I look at every time I see a school being children being massacred in a school here in America, I say to myself, "Oh, I'm a conspiracy theorist. Oh, you're thinking that this child or these children were used? Their brain has been chipped. They be saying they heard voices, that something was telling them to do this." And then they look like they were in a daze, like they don't even realize that they've done what they've done. And I say to myself, is there someone out there practicing devil worship and they needed so many human sacrifices, and this is the kind of human sacrifice that they needed? They needed a certain number, and then they do these things, and they have this stuff happen in the school system. And like down the one in Parkland, a former FBI agent broke down and cried because they already knew since January 5th that something was going to take place down there. I think that parents and everyday lay people need to wake up and realize that there is a 1% or so-called elite running this country, the oligarchy or whatever, and they don't really give a damn about your teacher. Who would have thought that a teacher would get killed or someone could get killed in the school system? I'm 64 years old. I would have never dreamed of anything like this ever happening or taking place. I was going to school, and now it's like everyday happenstance, and we have a socially, it's a culture that's socially acceptable. It's socially acceptable in America to be violent after your after those people won the football game up here in Philadelphia. They went out there and they rioted in the street. They destroyed the people's property. Nobody went to jail. Two people went to jail. But if somebody got out there and was protesting somebody being killed that was of color or melanated people, how many people would have gone to jail? And I said to myself also, this guy walked away from the school. And when they did apprehend him, they didn't kill him.
Mm-mm.
So what's up with that? You know, it's socially this violent culture that we live in, it's socially acceptable to be violent. And you've been doing this since you were hanging black men from trees, castrating them, burning them, whatever. It's socially acceptable for you to go out there and do it because of who you are, Caucasian, European American, whatever. But if other people go out there and do something horrendous behavior like this, then there's something, you have double standards here and everything. But we live in a society where it's okay to be violent. It's part of our culture. And that's a very sad state to be in the year 2018, in the 21st century. And I guess our children are petrified. They're scared to death because nobody's protecting them. They have no protection. And so now you want to arm the teacher? So who is she going to shoot? A student? So the student is coming to school knowing that his teacher can shoot him if they choose to? I feel threatened by you, so I shot you. Who is that for? Who are you going to shoot? Who is the teacher going to shoot? A student? His student?
Yes.
That's crazy. And I think most of the educators in America feel that way. That's ludicrous. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. I heard some other people agreeing with you. I just wanted to ask this question before we, you know, go into a deeper. Are you all familiar with the critical race theory? Dr. Mustafa, I think you probably are. You do a lot of reading about these sociological issues that are race-based. Are you familiar with the critical race theory?
In summation, that term I understand, but can you elaborate? I do have an opinion of it related from a Dr. Francis Kress Welsing perspective.
Right. Okay. Actually, I'm just becoming familiar with it. Sister Blaine, do you know about it? Sister Blaine, do you know about the critical race theory? He's not on. I had put her on, mistakenly put her on mute. Okay, now you go. Go ahead, Sister Blaine. Do you know about the critical race theory?
No, not a fan. I don't want to comment on that.
We're not going to get into it. Maybe we'll talk about it another time. But some of the scholars, I won't mention the scholars' names right now. There's about four or five African-American scholars who have taken the position that race, essentially white supremacist type of theories and ideas, underpin all of the sociological realities that exist in, particularly in the United States. And so when you look at it from their perspective, then even this idea of arming the teachers in the schools would have its real basis in some type of white supremacist ideology, vis-a-vis the fact that in a lot of these schools, you now have white administrators over African-American students, and the idea, in some cases, you still have teachers in the classrooms that are Caucasian when you have a mixture of Hispanic and African-American students, or primarily African-American students. And the idea, if you use this critical race theory, is that these people would be using these the guns to defend themselves against attacks by these crazed black folks that might pounce on them, and so they need to have a weapon. And probably, if you extend this argument out a little bit further, probably they would be allowed to have semi-automatic pistols. You know, so the idea being that the four or five gang bangers, and I don't like using that term, but I just say it, you know, four or five young men that look threatening, you know, 6'2" basketball players that look kind of surly, are looking at the teacher in such a way that he feels threatened. He would feel a little more secure, or she would feel a little more secure, knowing that they could fire off, you know, 9 or 10 you know, rounds in rapid succession and take all these folks down, you know. So it's not just about the idea of some, you know, crazy students like Florida coming in there to massacre the kids. It's also about the idea of the teachers being able to take out those, as you said, man, take out those threatening students that they might, for whatever reason, but maybe because of their ideas about black and white, might feel threatened by. So all of these things, you know, are in a large sense part of the equation. So I just wanted to share that. And I see our friend and our regular panelist, Dr. Bianchi. I said Dr. Bianchi, but that's all right. How are you tonight, Mr. Bianchi?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good.
I'm sorry.
You know, on these things of did you know that knives are used more to kill than rifles in the United States? Especially in 2016.
Maybe Dr. Mustafa might be familiar with some of those statistics. He's a retired police officer, and maybe he knows. I wasn't aware of it myself.
I see.
Well, let me comment if I could. I'll comment if you want me to, but go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, he said go ahead. Go ahead, Mustafa.
Well, okay, in law enforcement, knives are more dangerous for police because of the close proximity, and the stabbing can open up a big wound and the pullout of the knife, depending on the type of knife it is. So police officers are very much very scared of the knives themselves. And in terms of guns, it's a different situation. So it does have relevance in terms of the danger that knives pose, and they're very... the razors are not as dangerous as a knife, where you shaft a person with a knife, and you could cause the kind of injury to the internal organs. And depending on where you hit with the knife, you could cut a artery, et cetera. So points relevant there. I just want to say that it's, to me, it's like the Rambo fantasy of anyone as a police officer. Excuse me, any citizen wanting to have a gun to act like Rambo. And you have to be very aware that the John Wayne syndrome is a real phenomena of young police officers when they get trained. They get trained to be protectors of law enforcement, and they come out with the attitude of this gun being like so heavy on their side that they always are playing with it in relation to public service with people from the other culture aside from their own. And what I'm saying is an intimidation factor to be able to be a young white police officer or somebody who even black who don't identify with white or even Hispanic who don't identify with white to have that powerful gun on your side, it makes you think that you are invincible to the point you start to project this unrealistic perception of you being a super confident person when in fact you are really a coward in terms of what you have on your side as a gun, but you have not the words to what you use as an intervention phase. You want to be able to communicate yourself out of trouble as opposed to putting on this false air of power that will bring some of the criminal-minded people out quicker.
Well, we understand that, but I was in discussion with some people today, and I told them that the knife, you know, we were talking about the AR-15. I told them the AR-15 is nothing but a rifle, a semi-automatic rifle. It can be chambered for a .22 long rifle, the same as a squirrel rifle is, or it can be chambered for, you know, the 5.56. But according to the FBI, UCR, and also the Uniform Crime Reports, knives kill much 4 times more people in the United States than is done by the rifle. I didn't say handguns, I said the rifle. And being that we're talking about that particular AR-15 semi-automatic rifle. And you know, the peculiar thing about this incident in Florida, that school district was not accountable in making sure that when students or anybody enter that school building, that they are treated like somebody coming from the outside. The resource officer was outside. He should have been at his desk. He should have checked out this young person that came in with a duffel bag or a bag or whatever, and it should have been inspected. That's the way it is in most schools that I go to. And so here they was lax in their accountability. Now they want to march and take away privileges and rights that I have in another state because of what they didn't do accordingly. And that's totally ridiculous. And one other thing, Donald Trump never said that he was going to require teachers to have handguns. He doesn't have that authority. That's up to that school district to do that. If the school district wants teachers to have handguns, then at the federal level, they cannot impede that, and they can remove anything that does impede that.
So that's good. I just want to interject this one thing. The reason why we chose the topic focusing on Donald Trump's proposal is because of the fact that he has a worldwide pulpit, if you want to use that term. He has a worldwide stage so that anything that he proposes is going to get immediate attention in the news. And so this was one of the issues that has been in the news during the past week since he had said that. And so we just wanted to see what the responses were, not toward the actual implementation of it. That may or may not happen in districts, and it may happen in a lot of them. But we wanted to see what the responses were or are to his proposal. That's what we were talking about.
And school districts that don't receive hardly none or any federal funding, the federal government don't have any stipulations on those school districts. Now, as far as the proposal is concerned, I think it would probably be a good idea if they had signs on the building stating the fact that you had armed personnel inside that building. That would be a deterrent for anybody to come in. People don't like to be shot back at or shot at all. So if that is known that would happen, it would be a deterrent. Just like the United States won't lob missiles over on Russia, or Russia won't lob missiles over on the U.S.
I think the point that the children are making is being missed. I think that people who are into guns, gun collectors, people who go hunting, enjoy their weapons, or have the concept in their head that my gun is my protection and God is my protector. And the children, here they are in an environment where they're supposed to be safe, and nobody's protecting them, because the person that was supposed to be protecting them, he heard all the gunfire, but he stayed outside because he was afraid. And here you have these children, they've been traumatized. They're seeing their classmates shot up, their teachers, these people are bleeding all over the hallway, this stuff. They're already traumatized. And then you bring in the SWAT team and all these police forces from all around. And, you know, like I said before, we live in this socially acceptable, violent, cultural society that we live in. And they've been exposed to all this shoot 'em up, bang, bang, police killing people, shooting people down in the street. And now they're in my school, and I'm traumatized. And I don't even know what's going on. All I know, somebody came in my school and shot up and killed people that I know and I love. And now the police is standing around with guns. And the police would have killed them, too, if somebody would have told them to. I'm sure they would have killed those children if someone would have told them to kill those children. So now you got these children traumatized. They're walking out, holding on. As a matter of fact, you even let the person who shot up everybody walk out with the children, just like he was one of them. Nobody knew, whatever. This is how sick and relaxed our society is when it comes to protecting the children. Because children are concerned about being protected. They don't care about your guns. They want to know what you're going to do to protect me in my learning environment. Do I need more weapons in my learning environment for protection? Why don't you have that stuff that you have at the airport set up in my school to protect me, so that anybody that comes in here has to go at the courthouse? Since 9/11, every federal building in the United States has to have you got to be checked into the building. You can't come into the building with any kind of weapons on you or anything like that. Why aren't our children being protected? You're missing what the children are saying. And it doesn't even matter, because all you want to know is make sure that, hey, I got to still keep my gun. That's my protection. God is a protector, but my gun, my weapon, that's my protection. The children want to know, what are you going to do to protect me? Why didn't Donald Trump say, well, we're going to fix the school so they're like the airports. They're secure. He's talking about army people. So then maybe that is part of his I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. Okay, I'm through.
Well, what the children should be asking is their parents in that school district, what are they going to do in order to make sure that doesn't happen in that school district? I being in Missouri or Baton Rouge, that's not my responsibility. In our school district, we do the things necessary to make sure that that type of protocol is followed.
So let me just say this. The idea of the national spokesman for law enforcement, the chief law enforcement officer under the Constitution, who is also the commander in chief of the military army, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard also. You know, he's proposing, I think he's serious, you know, I think he's really serious, that the teachers be armed. Now, it may be necessary for the individual districts to make that decision, but it's just the fact that he has proposed that, and, you know, the idea is out there now. And I agree with all of you. My concern is that the environment of the school will no longer be conducive to learning if the students go to school not so much afraid of some, what I would say, mentally unstable former student coming in there doing what Cruz did in Florida, but that some teacher may, by accident or on purpose, may go off with that firearm and hurt some students. And then when you've got a school where you have 30, 40 teachers or more, and they're all packing sidearms, you know, that environment no longer is an environment that's a pleasant place to be. It's, in my opinion, more or less like being in some type of jail situation, except that in the jails, once you get inside of the bars, they, for the protection of the correctional officers, they make the officers leave their weapons on the outside. And here you're going to have officers being the teachers with the guns on the inside.
Well, that's still up to the school district. And, you know, especially you, if you have school districts that don't receive federal funding, federal government can't tell them what to do, basically. Trump, the president can make proposal, but for it to be a law, it has to go through Congress, go through the process of a bill becoming an act being voted upon and approved that way. So it's people that's doing grandstanding what it is. And the first responsibility of those children in that school, just like the school down the street from me, is the citizens in that community, the board members, who they elect. They supposed to say, this is what we need to have. And that's where it begins at. You don't have to go, you know, it's just like if you look out in your back, in your alley, and there's somebody's dumped trash. Well, you don't call the president. You don't even supposed to call the mayor. You're supposed to call the people who's in charge of the street department to come alleviate that problem, unless you want to do it yourself. So that's a bunch of grandstanding that I see that's going on. And the issue is about keeping citizens from having a particular type of gun. That's what's been the issue for quite some time. And like I say, it's silly. When I was a kid, we used to walk to school, and we would have our Enfield rifle on a strap over our shoulder. It was a .22 because we had gun practice at the end of the school day. On certain days, it wasn't every day; it was on certain days. In Atlanta, right now at North High School, they have gun training in that school. Boy Scouts, Eagle Scouts, gun training, marksmanship, or your merit badges. So they're going to say that they want to take people hunt with AR-15s because it's legal to hunt with it. Your chamber can only hold 3 shells. If I hunt with my shotgun, I can only have 3 rifle slugs in my chamber. If I hunt with a 30-06, I can only have 3 slugs in the chamber. That's the rules. Well, in this state, anyway.
Mr. Gillespie, my mother told me she learned to shoot a rifle when she was 5 years old. Okay. Our children have been dumbed down. Matter of fact, our society has been dumbed down. And we have a lot of mentally ill people out here now. And I don't know what the solution is to get control of the guns, because the law of the land is what the Constitution says, that people have the right to bear arms. So no matter what anybody says, that is the supreme law of the land, that you can have a weapon. So people are up in arms right now because they're thinking that somebody wants to take their gun away from them. But the fact is that you went to school to learn how to use a gun. We don't have people out here who are responsible enough to use weapons like that. They haven't had any training. So are you suggesting that everybody in the school system should be trained how to use a gun? Are you suggesting that all of our children should be trained how to use guns, how to use weaponry? Is that what you're suggesting?
This is Dr. Mustafa. I just want to make a comment if I could. Professor, can you hear me okay?
I hear you just fine. You're loud and clear. Go ahead.
Okay. What I want to say is that this is a case, in my personal opinion, of the chickens coming home to roost. Because I think there's a two-pronged solution And I would say I would do this first. For example, in the black community, there's a different temperament of behavior compared to the white community in terms of having the privileged nature that they perceive themselves as being better than. And Columbine was a good example of how the students themselves could come in and be violent that you wouldn't expect it. So what I would suggest is that you would take a, say, a black community school system and have local people who know the students and kids in the community to be a part of the security without guns, just being friendly faces who have the interests of the young people at heart. Now, on the other side, in the white communities, is something that we can't, black people, at least I'm talking from my perspective, we can't make them change because a lot of them in their communities feel that they are authoritarian when it comes to white supremacy and doing what they want to do. So in that case, I'm going to say the black community needs to focus on the black community's volunteer support systems that would allow people from the local community to engage themselves as a part of what is the idea of extended family management systems. And then at that point, I would say personally, let the white communities do what they will, because it is a curse, in my opinion, as to what they're going through because of what they did historically to other people. Now it's coming back to them, and now they don't have answers. So that's my opinion, and I stand by that.
Let me just say this, you know, so that we don't get away from the main topic. And the main topic is this proposal, and it just happened to be the president that made it, but other people may have said it before. I think I have heard, you know, it suggested by others that the teachers be allowed to bring their personal weapons with them into the classroom to protect the students and protect themselves. But that was the main topic. Now, the other topic that you're introducing, you know, it really has to do with some underlying issues. And one of the things, of course, that sounds like would be a good idea that's been discussed is the metal detectors at the entrances, like at the airport and at the federal buildings and the courthouses, et cetera. That's, you know, that's like putting a Band-Aid on the wound when you really need a major, you know, suturing up of the wound. Because the problem is that you have a lot of people, young people particularly today, that think that violence is the answer that will make them feel better because they have some emotional pain.
Yeah.
Obviously, this young man had a great deal of emotional pain, and from a rather young age, when he was out there killing animals, I saw a picture of a frog that he had killed, and he put it on his Instagram or his Facebook page. I don't remember which, but he had put it on social media. So he was disturbed. The boy lost his, well, he's actually adopted. I don't know where his real parents were, but his adoptive parents tried to help him, and that didn't keep him from going out killing animals and bragging about, you know, he wanted to be a real bad character. And then you also had him losing his father, who probably was the man in his life that probably kept him in check to some extent. And then he recently lost his mother and went into another foster care situation. But you got a lot of young people out here that have mental problems, real serious emotional problems. And for many of them, because of the culture, a violent-oriented culture, they think that, you know, using a firearm will solve their problems. And in this particular person's case, maybe because he was not liked or bullied, he felt he was going to take out his anger by killing his fellow students. So I think that there's a lot that has to be looked at. But the main thing is is giving these teachers an encouragement to want to bring firearms to school. Is that the answer? That's my big point. Is that the answer?
This is Dr. Mustafa. I don't mean to be taking the wave, but go ahead. Whoever got something to say, go ahead.
If that's the school district's desire, the parents and the stakeholders in the school district, then let them do that. That's up to them. That's not myself.
Well, let me
put
just
emphasis
say this.
On the young man. Look at all the failed checkpoints that he went through from the FBI. He turned himself in. He called 911 on his own self. So look at all the checkpoints that fail to check him when the issue and the question arose. That's not my responsibility in Missouri. It's not Judy's responsibility in California. That's that town, that school district in Texas' responsibility. Just like every other school district in the country.
Well, let me interject this, and you're right, but let me just say this, and then Dr. Mustafa, I want you to go ahead, but I just want to say this. You know, 100 years ago, or even 50 years ago, individual states and individual parts of the country, especially before TV became such a widespread vehicle of communication, might be able to be somewhat insulated or isolated or separated. But with global media today, we're all like really one big state in a sense. Legally, we're not, but in a real social sense and cultural sense, we are. What happens in California, even if a person doesn't have relatives in California, because in a few seconds after it happens, it's going to be broadcast, whether people in Mississippi or Alabama, Florida, wherever can see it, it's going to have an effect. So we're all being affected every time one of these mass shootings takes place in the schools, and people are grappling, even if they don't have children or even relatives of school age, in the society, they are going to be affected. And we're all, as a people together, we're united in grappling with an idea that something needs to be done. And right now, you know, several proposals to keep these things from occurring have been offered, just to have checkpoints at school doors with metal detectors and maybe extra security guards there. But the question, and I keep going back to the question, is regardless of who is responsible for enacting a law or implementing it, is it a good idea for a teacher to be bringing guns to the classroom? That's really the question I'd like to get somebody to help me.
Well, I'd like to help you if I could, Professor.
Go ahead.
I'm asking a question. If, for example, rather than the guns, this is the hypothetical, a teacher using tasers as opposed to guns might even be as dangerous as a gun or a knife. Just a taser itself from the electricity voltage that can cause a heart attack, the heart to stop. Now, what I'm going to say this, I don't know if you had a chance to observe people with video games in terms of playing with guns on video games, they become very centered in that as a reality, and that vicariously they're carrying out the words and the behaviors of like military and some loose-minded people just killing things just because in the video games. And that really triggers a lot of young people who haven't yet mastered the difference between the fantasy and reality to let that killing become their reality vicariously, and then it becomes a growing situation that becomes a syndrome amongst their peers, amongst their friends and their community. You understand? We have to address it from that perspective as solution-based. I'm not just going to talk about that subject. I'm telling you solution-based. We got to figure out how to get those video games out of these kids' minds. That's my position.
Yeah.
Well, let me just interject one more thing, and I don't want to monopolize the conversation, but last week, towards the end of the week, I think it was probably Wednesday before this past Wednesday, I am a postgraduate student as well as being a professor. I also take classes, and I'm actually taking a program of Spanish classes, not for a degree, but just for a personal what I would call enhancement. But the fact is that I was in my Spanish class before the professor came in, and there was an excitement in there that normally didn't exist. And what had happened is that we have this alert system that students will be alerted if there's an incident on the campus. And so I hadn't looked at my phone, but other students had gotten the alert, and they were commenting on the fact that there was an active shooter on campus. What had happened is we have actually three campuses at the university. So there's a campus where I am, and then there's another campus about 6 miles away downtown at the medical college. And adjacent to the medical college, there's a veterans, I guess you could say, a rehabilitation center. That's in that same complex, and some very disgruntled husband had gone down there. I'm not going to tell you all the circumstances. I just learned what happened, why he was angry, but he went down there, and he got his wife to come out to the parking lot, and he shot her to death. And of course, that alerted the police and the security people for the university, and so they put it on this network to let everybody know. And the students in my class, they wanted to leave. They wanted to get off the campus and go home to safety, thinking that the guy was going to come up on our campus. And I said, no, I think that he's been apprehended. But I found out later he hadn't been apprehended at that point, and that he had been a student that did take classes on our campus. And it may be that he might have thought about coming up there, but his issue wasn't that he wanted to kill people in general. He just wanted to kill his wife, and he did that. He's in custody now. But the fact is that after this happened, and I found out that he had an ID card where he could have come up on campus, and if we didn't know who he was, he could have taken refuge up there and taken hostages or whatever. And I was thinking, what would the students have been able to do? Basically, we would have been totally defenseless if somebody had come up in that building, because we don't have security officers in the buildings, not that I know of anyway. I've seen the chief security officer walk through there from time to time, but we don't have people stationed in the halls or roaming the halls. This is a university, and they patrol the grounds, but they don't come in the buildings as a general rule. What would we have done? So there has recently been passed a open carry law in Georgia where if people feel they need to do it, they can carry sidearms that people can actually see that they're armed. I haven't seen any students with any yet. But the fact of it is that are we moving towards society, as somebody said at the beginning of the program, where it's like the Wild West, where everybody, in order to feel safe, carries his own or her own sidearm on their hip. And if that's the case, will it evolve to the point where the high school students that are over whatever the age limit is for firearms, I think it was 18 in some places, and I heard that they're going to move it up to 21. But if that's something that the states control, and the state says, well, our 18-year-olds should be able to buy and carry a firearm, are we going to have kids sitting up in the classroom packing, semi-automatic pistols just in case an active shooter is doing something? Are we moving in that direction? That's just another part of the puzzle.
Well, this is Dr. Mustafa saying, we're becoming not just the Wild West, I would have to say the Wild, Wild West, because it's like we have, in years past as a country, have brought this kind of temperament on ourselves so that we have been allowing the things to start to build up, and it only when it affects other people of the different, of the majority of culture here in America, that they start looking at different solutions. But when it's in the Black community and other communities of minority, quote, minority, even though they're, you know, we're not minorities in the sense of the global numbers, but that is not important to them as it is for their own maintenance. And I'm not going color on this, but this is just historical fact. When crime is in the Black community, it's okay from a white perspective. When it's in the white community, it's not okay, and people go to try to stop it and all kind of different stuff with the technologies. Now, I'm going to give you something that I'm going to say about Katrina. When Katrina happened, there were people that came in and made all kind of money on the aftermath of Katrina, and the Black people who used to, who would stay there are not there, and the people came in with all kind of weird inventions, and they got funding from the federal government from these weird inventions that really were like stupid ideas that, you know, people just, you know, money's there, so just use the money. But I'm just going to say Black people need to start caring about Black people, and we start need to help on ourselves, because if we don't do it, no one else is looking after us, and we keep playing these games. We got to wake up. That's my opinion.
Well, let me ask you a question with all due respect, Dr. Stuff, but can you tie that in with this idea of the school teachers being told that, or at least that a proposal be put out there in the public mind that the school teachers should carry weapons to class. Could you tie that, what you were saying, into what I just mentioned?
Well, I would think that the teachers would be definitely against it, and the American Federation of Teachers and the different teacher associations across the country, that's not something that they would be, make a readily commitment to. And so I believe that it's the marketing what you might say, the fear-mongering that would cause people to change, have a change in mind. Now, what the fear-mongering does, it actually makes a victim, it makes a bad guy identified, and it's not going to be white. So the teachers who are majority white with those guns in the campus under a fear factor would be looking at those who are not of their cultural distinction. Now, if you understand child psychology, when you are dealing with a child from your own ethnic group, there's a different interaction that takes place. And this is something that we are ignoring as a group of people, that there are people from a cultural group who can reach those people from their communities. In reverse of that, if you have people as, say, the from the slave perspective as the, I'm going to say it like the overseers, then that's a hostile situation. So we have to really address this thing as adults, thinking about it from a perspective of actually how would my family under me as leading my family in my community, how would I like to see my family interact with the other families in the community that reflect my cultural group, and we can work in combination with the other cultural groups, and we have to understand that you cannot make a young person from a different cultural group respect you because you are in authority with age or gun in hand. These young people today don't care about that. They look at your behavior as a person who they have, you have to build up your credit with them in advance of any crisis. That's what I did as a police officer. That's what I do as a citizen today that's out of police work. It's called customer service, and it's, you have to do that in advance of crisis.
Well, I want to say this, and I want to invite whoever wants to speak, but let me just get this in. I don't mean to be so monopolizing of this, but I just want to say this. Now, I'm a retired military professional, and I was trained very, very extensively in the use of firearms and qualified as a sharpshooter on a number of occasions because we had to requalify on a regular basis. And I had to stand guard duty with a firearm on board ship and as well as at a guard tower over on the DMZ, the border between North and South Korea. And I felt very competent and I felt very confident that if there was a threat to my unit that I was responsible for protecting when I was on guard duty, that I could eliminate that threat by straight shooting, accurate shooting. Now, to extend that, if I was in a classroom and I heard on the PA system or a text message or whatever, Twitter or whatever, that there was a shooter on campus and the instructions were to have everybody stay in the classroom and for the people like myself, the teachers, to go to the front door to make sure that the shooter didn't come into class, I would feel a lot more confident and competent if I had a firearm and a firearm that was designed for that type of environment, like the Mossberg 500 shotgun. But I would rather not have a shotgun because it might spray and hit some innocent person. But I would certainly like to have a shoulder, pardon me, a pistol grip type of a weapon. And I've been trained to get in the prone position, the kneeling position, the crouching position, or whatever, to make myself a smaller target. And my objective would be, as a military veteran, to do the same thing that I'd be doing with that person overseas when I was on guard, is to take that person out so that my charges would not be harmed. Now, that's just my point of view being a military man. But I'm not suggesting that untrained people who've never been through rifle range and never qualified and don't know safety precautions regarding firearms, that all of these people be armed. But I would certainly feel a lot more confident that I could protect my charges if I did have the authority to have a firearm in case something like that happened. But I think that would be the end of the spectrum. I think at the beginning of the spectrum are all these other things you've talked about, but when the rubber hits the road, they definitely need to have a better system to keep these people out of the schools, to check them at the door, so to speak. And I think that's where they need to start before they start pushing the idea of the teachers carrying firearms in the classroom. That's all I want to say on that.
I want to say something else about teachers carrying firearms. We have really a lot of disciplinary problems in the school system today, and teachers lose control too. Sometimes they get very emotional when they're dealing with their students. And who knows who's mentally ill and who's not mentally ill? Nobody knows. And with the discipline problems that we have today, no, I cannot see educators being armed because somebody might just lose it and decide, I'm shooting this kid because I'm fed up. You know, teachers do lose it, and they beat up on your students in some cases. So, I mean, there's so many things to look at. It's just, still, we live in a socially violent cultural society where it's acceptable to be violent. Thank you.
Okay, well, we've kind of exhausted the topic, unless somebody else wants to say it. All right, wrap it up in just a minute, but I do want to ask you all, because a number of you are our regulars, does anyone want to make a proposal for a topic for next week? Is there something else that's on your mind that you'd like for our panel to talk about?
You can use that.
Well, I don't know about that, but I'm going to close with this. The whole conversation, its action is the left is trying to use this incident with this school, with these children, to gather more gun control or the elimination of a particular type of gun. That's the AR-15, semi-automatic rifle. Just like the spokesperson for the NRA, Dana Loesch, when she spoke with Allison Cameron, a host with CNN, she said the media is using tearful white women. And she made mention that black mothers, tearful white mothers, black mothers, and gave incidents of the shootings that they have experienced, they'll never mention, basically. It's not for verbatim, but that's what she was getting to. Another point, this attack on the NRA is totally, totally preposterous also. There are over, I don't know how many, gun clubs, gun organizations in the United States. You have Jewish clubs, you have Jewish organizations, that's for the right to own guns. You have Students for Concealed Carry, you have women groups, you have over 40 to 44 black groups across the country that's pro-gun, gun clubs, and also all these associate clubs are associated with the NRA because the NRA is a spokesperson. It is the advocacy wing for gun rights in the United States. Other organizations have advocates. Other industries have advocates. The construction industry have advocates. The Jews have advocates with AIPAC. The teachers union have advocates with the NEA and American Federation of Teachers. So you mean to tell me that gun owners cannot have an advocacy for protecting their Second Amendment rights? It's not the Second Amendment rights. The Second Amendment protections is what it is.
Yeah, I understand. But just, you know, basically saying it's just the same thing. I agree with you. Well, I believe in people having the right to own firearms for their home defense. I'm a strong believer in that. And I see where Donald Trump just tweeted that the people who are, first of all, he agrees with you. He says the states should be the ones to make the decision. He didn't use the term, as you did, Ms. Bianca, about the districts, the school districts. But he said states, and then he said that the people, in order to be able to bring firearms into the schools, the teachers need to have training, annual training, and he uses the word be adept. I would say in military language, they would have to qualify with whatever weapon.
Absolutely.
That they were going to use. But he predicts that the 20%, that the way that this thing is going to go, in his opinion, he says he envisions 20% of the teachers and other school personnel in the future will be carrying weapons. So he's saying that one out of five.
I think on college campus, college students, they're grown adults, they should be have the right to carry on their campus for their protection. Another thing, I cannot tell any person what they need to protect themselves, what they feel safe with. Some people may feel safe with a baseball bat. Some people may feel safe with a .22. Some people may feel safe with a .45. That's up to them. So why do we try to say that they should not have a certain safety, a certain weapon, a certain arm that provides them with safety?
Well, anybody want to respond to this, Bianchi, on that?
I have a thought. I think that we should just deal with like Switzerland, where that all the citizens in that country have guns that they have, but they're trained, and that's the difference. In a very thorough way, because I believe that as Americans, we all enjoy this democracy despite some of its inadequacies, but in a general sense, we should have the training of people like in Switzerland and not let it get out of hand with people, white, not wanting blacks to have guns, because that could become another part of it, of the idea of a racial war that people are kind of like gearing up for, and we're not talking about that. See, that's what I believe that is taking place. There are sound bites that are reaching out for people's, what you might look at as a sound bite of how do we feel about having guns in the classrooms, that will expand to other communities, specifically of color. And now we have the little young black, young aggressive kid being targeted as a threat, when only the kid is emotionally charged because of certain foods that's being eaten, or certain water that's being served in certain communities, or certain air that's regulated dysfunction there. So this is my perspective. We need to look at it from a total, let us all arm up then. If we're going to arm up, let us all arm up, and let's get trained up properly, and let's utilize it like Switzerland. That's my last opinion.
Well, you know, another thing too, real quick. You know, there's several cities in America where if you live in a city, you are required to have a gun in your house, in the ordinances. One of those cities is Kennesaw, Georgia, right outside of Atlanta. You got Virgin, Utah. You got Gun Barrel City, Texas. And you got Nuda, Colorado. It's in the ordinance that each house has got to have, you know, a weapon. I think Nelson, Georgia also was trying, but I don't know what the results were with them. So why come we don't hear, and the crime rates in these cities are low. Kennesaw has about a 40% black population. So what is it that, how is this deterrent helping to keep their crime low, where the citizens, the occupants, the residents in those cities are required to have a firearm in their home?
When you say required, what do you, how are they?
The city ordinance. The city ordinance, just like the city ordinance says that if you're going to put a fence in the front yard, that it can only be so high, your city ordinance says that you got to have a firearm in your house.
And do they, in the ordinance, is it saying the type of firearm that you have to have, and what are the consequences if you don't have one?
I don't know what the consequences if you don't have one. I don't think they can tell you what you can't have, as long as it's legal. You can't have, well, if you got the proper permits, you can have a fully automatic Thompson machine gun. But I don't think that either way, that's the way it is.
So the people that are in the governing positions in that community have decided that everyone has to have a gun in their home.
It may have went for a referendum where the people voted on it themselves. I don't know.
Yeah, let me just interject this. I was just looking it up, and in Kennesaw, Georgia, as you mentioned, there's an ordinance that requires residents to have a gun in the house. It was passed in 1982, and the city council was introduced to the city council as an ordinance, and the city council unanimously passed a law requiring heads of households to own at least one firearm with ammunition. It doesn't mention any particular type of firearm. I was looking to see if it did, but I don't see anything where it actually says it has to be a certain kind of firearm, so I guess it's up to the individual to choose the firearm that they want.
Now, that says in their home. So what happens if
you're
home?
Talking about in the home. Yeah.
You know, what happens if you're not in the home? I wonder.
Yeah, but no, I was just backing up with what Mr. Pianca said. I went up online while we were having the discussion, and I saw where, you know, where that actually was the law that's been in effect since 1982.
But it's just an interesting.
Texas is a right to carry state, open carry too, if I'm not mistaken. In Missouri, you don't have to have a concealed carry license to conceal carry. If you got a concealed carry license, you can open carry.
Now, I say where another Georgia city. Did you mention Nelson, Mr. Bianchi? Did you mention Nelson, Georgia? Now they.
Yes,
I did. Well, okay. They agreed to revise an ordinance that was earlier passed that required every household to own a gun. So I don't know if that city still requires it. I know they had passed an ordinance requiring it. But I think they overturned theirs at Nelson. So I'm not sure, but I guess really we're going to wrap up in just a minute, but I guess really the point is, you know, is that is our culture going back to the 1800s, the Wild Wild West, you know, where people felt that they needed to have their own arms on their person in order to feel safe? Are we moving in that direction? We can talk about it more, but I think we've probably exhausted most of the aspects of it, unless somebody else wants to add something before we close. I think we've reached a good point where we can close. Does anybody else, before we go, want to add something?
Well, Congress is working on a reciprocal carry for the whole country. In other words, if you license to carry in Missouri, when you drive to Tennessee, drives to Arkansas, drive to New York or New Jersey, there's nothing that you can do to you because you have licensed in the state that you come from, and vice versa. And I think that's a good thing.
Well, I think it's a real good thing because I'll just share this one reason why I'm such a big advocate of home defense firearms. Is because I actually was the victim of a home invasion many years ago, and I had never owned a personal firearm, even though I had had a number of firearms assigned to my use in the military, but I never had a personal firearm in my house until the home invasion, and I immediately got a shotgun. But shortly after that happened, I was given orders, military orders, to go to another state. And so I basically sold the firearm that I had, which I was feeling very comfortable having. It was a good piece, as we call it in the military. It was a 20-gauge shotgun, but something that I felt I could handle very easily. And so, but I felt that I didn't want to have to, you know, do any explaining if the police, for whatever reason, whether it was a roadblock, ID check, or whatever, stopped me, and even I might have had it in my trunk or in the back seat, they might have asked, you know, what am I doing with this firearm? And I could say I'm going hunting, but then they'd say, where's your hunting license? If I said, well, I'm caring for self-protection, then they might have questioned me. Whereas what you're saying would have probably made it a lot easier for me to feel comfortable carry my firearm across state lines, and I really felt bad when I had to get rid of it because I just didn't want any trouble. So that might be one answer, but I think the real, you know, solution here, to get back to something Dr. Mustafa said, and I think maybe you also said it, Sister Blaine, and we've got to actually ratchet back on this culture of violence that's affecting these young people every day. And now with virtual reality games where they can actually become immersed in a world of violence by putting on these goggles. I don't know if any of y'all are familiar with this new phenomenon that's happening in the gaming world, but I've just recently become familiar with it. And trust me, you know, when these kids get into that space where they're alone with all of this violence, where the goggles block out the rest of the real world, this can actually influence their their thinking, and they might not start off being violent prone, but after a couple, 3 years of that, in their spare time, it's possible that they might think that violence is really the way to answer all problems. And so something needs to be done, I think, on that scale, on that particular level. Anyway, any more want to make comments before we close?
Yeah, I just want, it may be an extreme position, but everyone's going to carry their own protection. Will we need police officers? Will we need police forces?
That's a good point. I just want to say this. Why do we need police officers now? They're not just to protect the society. They're to respond to crimes, whether they're somebody robbing the bank, or you know, nowadays, if there's an alarm that goes to the police station, they're not just going to have four or five policemen dressed up in regular police uniforms show up. They're going to have an armored vehicle with SWAT team personnel with special kinds of weapons, even laser rifles or some type of spotlight, so that if the power's been turned off in that particular bank, they can see, whereas maybe the criminal won't be able to see. So they've got all kinds of high-tech stuff. So it's not just a matter of personal protection. The police do a quasi-military function as well, in terms of, you know, if there's some kind of riot, they take on the role of being just like the military. Instead of bringing in the National Guard, they've trained the police to put on those kinds of military uniforms and get that kind of equipment and act like the National Guard used to act in terms of subduing rebellions. So the police have an increasingly military role. So I don't know. I think that the civilians shouldn't replace the police in terms of their functions, but I think that there's going to have to be something to kind of tamp down this whole movement towards becoming such a violent society like we used to be. Did that address your question, sister?
Yeah, no, I'm just, you know, like I said, if anybody's going to have a gun, we won't need to call the police. We can just, you know, use our guns when we feel threatened.
Yeah, but when you have a situation where the threat is coming from some type of organized, almost military entity, even a gang that's terrorizing a part of the neighborhood, you're going to have some people that really know what they're doing to come in there and to be able to eliminate that particular threat. So we're always going to need police, in my opinion, even though some people may feel more secure on an individual basis if they have a weapon and they're trained to use it. I know personally myself, I wouldn't feel as secure as I do if I hadn't had the training to use a firearm that I had in the military. And if it got to the point at school, not that I'd want to continue working upon the school upon the campus, but it got to the point where I felt that there was a possibility that some deranged student or non-student might come through the hall shooting, I think I would probably wish, if that happened, that I had something that I could shoot back with. Hopefully it won't come to that. But then with things going in the direction they're going, I think we have to be aware that that's a possibility on any campus, high school or college, and in some cases even the middle schools are becoming dangerous places. So it's a dangerous time, no doubt about it. Well, look, we thank everybody for your participation tonight. We were gone last week, but we don't intend on a regular basis to miss the opportunity to have this family forum. And we want to let you know that everyone is welcome. If you have friends that would like to join, just give them the number that you used to call in and the more the merrier, so to speak. So God bless all of you, and hopefully you'll enjoy the rest of the weekend and be safe out there if you're driving. One final invitation, does anybody want to say any last word before we go? Okay, well, in that case, you know, we thank you again. We always like to end with some music, and this is going to be a little different than what we normally play, kind of like a little jazz piece. We can get it to come up. I don't know if we will. We'll try. But having a problem bringing up that music. So we're just going to end with our commercial we usually play. That's what I did do.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006.